Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So we can catch up with the former longtime NFL head coach and play caller, our buddy Jay Gruden.
On air and on the road, Jay Gruden is driven by the Tedbert Automotive Group, Tedbert Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 HQ, Tedbert Lincoln and Chantilly, and Tedbert Chevy in Sterling, all home to Tedbert for life, lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at Tedbert.com.
Jay, 2-2 for Washington. At home, they've won convincingly twice, and on the road, they've looked like a completely different team. What'd you see yesterday when you put on the film?
I saw Atlanta get off to a pretty quick start. You know, they got Bijan going. They got the running game outside zone going, and there was a lot of missed tackles, a couple missed progress, or just some bad defensive football there for a little while. And then, you know, Washington hung in there like they normally did, and they just couldn't quite catch them. And every time Atlanta needed a play, they made a play. And every time Washington needed a stop, they couldn't get a stop. But, you know, a tough road loss. I thought that if Atlanta was allowed to hang in there early, then they'd play pretty good till the end. I was hoping that Washington would kick them in the teeth early and give them no reason to think they could win, but unfortunately, they let them hang around and they beat them.
Yeah, Bijan Robinson is so good. They held him below his season average in terms of yards per carry. Don't worry about the pass game. We'll get that in a second. And held Tyler Allgeier to just over 3 yards per carry. I know there were some missed tackles in there in some moments. I think that's going to happen. But to me, Jake, was those second and 16s, those second and 17s, those third and longs where you've earned it and those passes were just easily completed for Atlanta. What are you seeing in the pass defense? And why is Washington struggling so badly?
I think they're trying to, I don't know, I think the safety play was pretty much below average, you know, and they're playing a half field. They're playing so far deep. They're giving up these deep seven cuts out there in the corners, having too much room to carry either get underneath that route or cover the flat route. So he's kind of in a pickle. So safeties are just a little bit too deep. And then when they try to play some single high coverages, they get, Bobby got caught out in space a couple times, and that's really not his forte to try to cover Bijan Robinson on a wheel route. That's not where you want to put them. There's a lot of things that they can correct and move them forward. But I think the safety play for me is what stood out to me the most. They got to work on the safety play and protect Bobby a little bit more in some of those space plays.
And they were without starter Will Harris, without one of their top safety reserve guys as well, Percy Butler, in this game to that point. Jay, what about corner play? And specifically, what are you seeing from Marshawn Lattimore?
He gave up the out and up early in the game, the big play. I don't know. I want to see more from Marshawn. I was hoping he'd play a lot better. This wasn't his best game, obviously. He gave up a key third down of 7. He should have been outside leverage. It should have been an incompletion, but they let Drake run an out route on him on 3rd and 7, which that's really – I never would even try an out route on Marshawn Lattimore back in the day. It was 3rd and 7. He'd squat on that and pick it. I think he's going to – he's got to play better. He didn't play very good against Atlanta.
When you mentioned the safeties, Jay, that you've forgotten more this morning than I'll know my entire life. But for me, it's the corners that are always so visible, right? Where they're just guys have separation. We're talking about Lattimore, et cetera. Go into the safeties a little bit and what they're not doing. Is that a scheme thing, or is it just maybe that, you know, Quan Martin doesn't move around as well and they really miss Will Harris or Jeremy Chinn from last year? Go into what you saw with the safeties.
Yeah, a lot of missed tackles. I mean, a lot of not getting off blocks and taking bad angles in the running game. You know, the last touchdown, you know, Von Miller, you know, wasn't on block, but, you know, the safety's right there. All he has to do is shed a receiver and make a tackle for a 5-yard gain or 4-yard gain. And some bad angles. You know, the other touchdown to Bijan, you guys are trying to punch the ball out instead of wrap him up and tackle him. You know, so just some poor tackling by the safeties, poor coverage. They dropped the coverage on Kyle Pitts for the touchdown on the flat route. That was a safety's responsibility. You got nosy, looked in the backfield, and all of a sudden Kyle Pitts runs a flat route for a walk-in touchdown. You got to make Michael Penix earn his completions. You got to make them earn their yards, and I think there's too many gimmies because of the safety play. Then the pass coverage, like I mentioned before, they're just getting too deep, and they're a non-factor in the pass game.
Jay Gruden with us on Grant and Danny. They ended up hitting Michael Penix on only two plays. He had two hits on the quarterback. He was one of the worst in the league coming into the game when pressured. He was completing like 40% of his passes on the season, and he was negative 15, you know, completion percentage over expected, which was worst in the NFL. A lot of just bad burned balls under pressure, and then they got zero pressure. Are you surprised they didn't try to bring more heat, that they did kind of play so much zone and play off, or do you think they should have expected to be able to get home with four? What went wrong there?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Atlanta played pretty good up front, both in the running game and pass protection. They did a good job, and the four-man rushes weren't working. They tried a couple five-man fire zones, and they did not get home, unfortunately. And then, you know, when they did try a five-man fire zone, that Bobby was caught out in space trying to cover Bijan on a wheel route, and that was a 70-yard gain. So just pick your poison right there, and sometimes you got to try to get home with four guys, and if you can't, you put your defense, your safeties, your linebackers, your corners in a big pickle, and you know, that's something that, you know, probably needs to be addressed later on. They need to find some pass rushers to get home with four-man rush.
Jay Gruden on G&D. So I've got a follow-up to this in a second. I'm going somewhere with this, but I'm going to ask you more broadly first. Like, you made your money for many, many years in this league, watching the tape and then putting together a plan against flawed defenses or defensive flaws that you could find. How would you attack this defense right now? Because I there's something I want to play off of with this.
Yeah, I'd spread them out, get you guys, make them play out in space. You know, Wagner's and Luvu, these are great physical, tough guys between the tackles, but having them cover flat routes and wheel routes and all that stuff, put them in a pickle and try to get after the safeties as often as I could with four verticals or three verticals and make them cover ground. And, you know, if I did get man-to-man pre-snap reads, we'd have some very good audibles to get after some of these guys in man coverage, that's for sure.
So what I've noticed over now, really post-Green Bay, so what is that, three games, is a lot of the stuff the Packers did keep showing back up. And so among other things, and I'd have to sit down and show you, and you could tell me what it's all called and how it works, but these three-by-one looks where you get these crossers and these drags across the field, you know, the quick out stuff like you were talking about with the third and seven on Lattimore, where they motion him down, he follows London kind of in toward the box, then they whip him back out and he's following him. And before he can even get out there, he's on the wrong leverage and they move the sticks with ease. This is all stuff the Packers did all night long, and the Raiders did it and it worked. And now we've seen the Falcons do it and it worked. The book is kind of out here. I guess my question is that how it works, where you see that and you just go to that well the next week with your team? And what can Joe Witt do?
Well, Zach Robinson, he's an offensive coordinator. He came from Sean McVay, and Sean McVay and LaFleur and all these guys are from the same tree. So you can pretty much put a lot of these plays on third down, a lot of these formations and motions, and group them together. You know, that's the beauty of, you know, Sean and Zach Robinson and Matt LaFleur. They're going to change up formations to try to get you guys in a pickle or try to get the defenses in a pickle by motioning people across the formation or short motion or motion and stacks and bunches, make you guys play off of them. And it's tough, especially on third down and man coverage. So that's the book that they write. You know, the good offensive coordinator is going to write the book for you. They're not going to just lay back and figure out what the defense is going to do and then try to do something later. No, we're going to attack. They're going to attack and make you make plays. And Zach had a good game plan this week. Last week he got shut out by Carolina. So what a difference a week makes, that's for sure.
Jay Gruden with us here on Grant and Danny. So, you know, as a you know, guy that made his living as a really, really good offensive mind, Jay, let's say one of your coaches this week, defensive coordinators or otherwise, came to you and said, I'm struggling, you know, like, help me, figure something else out. Let's kind of brainstorm together to figure out sort of a way out of this thing. What kind of advice would you give?
Well, I think, you know, they've done a pretty good job. You know, this game was not very good. I think you mentioned the two safeties being out and they've got some injuries. You know, they didn't get much pass rush. They got to figure out ways to get unique pass rushes. I think when they had success against the Raiders, they did a great job moving front by stunting and PE stunts and ET stunts. And they were very active up front. For whatever reason, I think Atlanta had them on their heels because they were getting them with the outside zone a little bit and maybe had them a little bit on their heels and they're afraid to do some stunts because they don't want to get pinned and let Bijan get outside. So there were some issues there, but I think they get back to what they were doing against the Raiders, and I think they'll be fine. They just got to get back and get some third downs, get off the field, create a turnover. Finally got a turnover this week on an interception, and unfortunately Washington couldn't take advantage of it. They kicked a field goal but didn't get a touchdown. But I wouldn't panic too much. I just hopefully get some guys healthy and play a little bit better and play more sound and make tackles, for God's sake. Quit trying to strip the ball and just get the guys on the grass.
Yeah, Jay, Atlanta third in the league at this point in net yards per pass attempts allowed. So pretty good on defense, at least in that part of the game. What did you make of Marcus Mariota and kind of an underman offense?
I thought he did good. You know, a solid game for Marcus. You know, he had the unfortunate interception. He didn't see the safety. You know, he threw a nice ball. He thought he threw a nice ball there, and the safety came out of nowhere and made a hell of a play. Other than that, you know, he missed a play on third down. I think missed Zach Ertz, but he had a rusher right in his face, a key third down there. After the interception. But for the most part, I think Marcus competes. He had a good scramble. He moves around pretty good in the pocket. But, yeah, unfortunately, you know, they scored 27 points and just wasn't quite good enough this week. But if you expect your backup quarterback to put up more than 27 points week in and week out, you're probably wishful thinking. You got to play better defense when your backup quarterback's in. You got to create turnovers. You got to get off the field on third down. And those three third down conversions that Atlanta had in that long drive were critical. Penix's scramble, the out route to Drake London, and I think I can't remember the other one. I think it might have been a tight end. Pitts had one. So those are guys, ones you got to get off the field.
Yeah, Pitts, 22 and 26-yard catches in the game. Jay Gruden is with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Jay, if you have a back who's completely dynamic and every time he touches the ball, he's getting four or five more than is blocked up for him, and he's averaging six per on the season like he's playing in the Big 12, but maybe you don't trust him in pass pro, how do you have your cake and eat it too here, where you get him on the field as often as possible and get him more carries without that part of his game being exposed? Or can that just not work?
Well, it's you're going to want to throw the ball eventually with him in the game, right? So he's got to work on it. But he is explosive. He's done some really good things. And I think right now as a rookie, he only played one game last year in college. I mean, I think it might take some time where he'll earn his reps. And he'll get more and more reps as the season goes on. I mean, Rodriguez had a couple big hits as well, and they're going to try to use Deebo to get some touches as well. But this kid, you know, if you can't pass protect, you know, you're not going to play for many offensive coordinators because that is a key part of the game. People are going to rush a safety. They're going to rush a nickel. You're going to have to pull up and pick them up, a linebacker through the A-gap. This is a very important part of the game, almost equally as important as running the football. So once he gets the pass protection down, he's more confident, and I think you'll see more of him.
Speaking of running it, they've thumped pretty good here of late, especially with kind of this 2.0 version of this offensive line where they made a couple of substitutions, Chris Paul in there at left guard for one. But what have you kind of made of this offensive line as they're going forward here at this point?
Yeah, I think Chris Paul's played good the last 2 weeks. He blew a protection that kind of hurt him a little bit in the sack. But for the most part, I think they're playing more physical up front in the last couple of weeks, running the football against Atlanta and against the Raiders last week. So that's impressive, and that's what has to take place. I think Washington moving forward has to be the team that has the ball control and control the clock and convert on third downs, keep drives going, and keep that defense fresh. When that defense is fresh and they're running around, they're a hell of a lot better than when they're playing on the 14-play drive. They get exhausted, and the strength of Washington's defense is their effort. And when they can't play with great effort, they're very, very average, below-average defensive football team. So very important for them to keep the running game going, to keep that defense fresh.
Sounds like the Commanders are flying out to L.A. early. I think they're going to go out like Thursday afternoon, evening, something like that. They have a practice out there on Friday. How did you handle trips to the West Coast or cross-country?
I did them normal. I always thought Friday practice was so important. I want to get the most out of it. I don't want to go in a weird place and do it and figure out how to get dressed and showered and all that stuff. I wanted to make sure I got my Friday practice at home and get the hell out of there Saturday morning early and play and fly back. What the hell? I don't know. I don't think you really adjust to the time of going out there a day or two early. I could be wrong. I could have screwed it all up. Maybe I did. But I just like to do it normal. I make sure I got my good Friday practice and my good Saturday morning walkthrough and get the hell out.
In terms of this, you know, this game going forward, it looks like Jaden Daniels is on his way back, et cetera. What's fair to expect from him with a couple-week layoff and, you know, hadn't shown as much as he did last year through the first couple of games when he did play?
I expect him to be great. I mean, he's a great player. So, greatness travels, and he'll be fine. You know, if he's 100% healthy, he's going to do things with his legs and things with his arm. I just hope the people around him play good. You know, Debo's, you know, got to continue to play good. There's got to be another receiver to step up. You know, I don't know who that is going to be. Is it going to be, you know, McCaffrey's done a couple of good things. Moore had a big drop, and, you know, they tried to target him on a fade ball. He's gloved up. Somebody else has got to step up. So hopefully that happens, and the Commander offense is clicking and keeping the Charger defense at bay.
Jay Gruden on Grant and Danny. Let's go around the NFL here for a few minutes. Start with the Sunday night football game that ended in a 40-40 tie. If they name you commissioner for a day and you're in charge of operating overtime the way that you would like to? What would the rules be, and would there be ties?
Well, I think the rules for the Super Bowl should be the rules they are in regular season. Each team gets a chance to have the ball, and the team at the end of that one possession is the winner. And if it's not a, if it keeps going on, it could end up in a tie if nobody scores. But we had that in the Arena League ever since I was in the Arena League, and it's a great rule. I mean, because usually if the first team scores a touchdown, the team that scores coming back, they're going to go for two to try to win it, and the game will be over. If they kick a field goal, then that's, you know.
So you're okay with, like, last night, which was two field goals, and the clock expired, and it's just a tie?
Yeah, that happens, yeah. That doesn't happen very often, but two very long drives, a long drive by Dallas, and, you know, and you know, Green Bay screwed up the clock there at the end. Shouldn't have been a tie, but, yeah.
I'm team no ties ever, Jay. I think they're ridiculous.
I don't want to have a 10-yard line or a two-point play to decide it. I don't really like that. You know, I don't know. I think.
What about college?
Play normal play.
Why can't you go from like the 40 and we just go back and forth till somebody wins?
Yeah, you could do that. I just don't. I don't know. I don't know. It's like to have it regular quarter. Start another quarter like they do in the Super Bowl. You're not going to have many ties if that happens if you do it like that.
That's true.
That's what I want. I just want to play football. It's the weirdest concept I know. And everybody, it bothers everybody. They always want a gimmick. Just play another quarter of football.
I just never
want
to look at the standings again and see.
The and one.
And one. One and two and one. Like, that's soccer, man. We need wins and losses.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for reserve for sports where you play 100 of them or whatever. Like, hockey
right,
has it too.
Exactly.
I asked someone else this earlier. I want to get your take as someone who was in the league for so long. Why do you think the results early on in the season, like September, it seems like, I know maybe say this every year, but it feels like on an extreme level. Like, just take Atlanta, for example. Last week, they looked like the worst team in the NFL, getting shut out on the road at Carolina. This week, a buzzsaw, apparently. Defensively, really, really proficient, and offensively, they moved the ball against Washington. Why the variance to such a high degree early in the season in your mind? It doesn't feel like just for Atlanta, but it feels like for everybody.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to figure out. I mean, look at Carolina. They beat Atlanta 30-0. They go back and they lay an egg
right,
and get their ass beat this week. So, I mean, it happens. You know, I can't put my finger on it. Typically, the teams with great trigger men don't have a lot of regression. They stay pretty good. You know, the Josh Allens, they might have a tough quarter or two, but at the end of the day, the great trigger men are going to allow you guys to win. You know what I mean? And very good defenses are always going to keep you in games as well. You know, the teams that struggle week in and week out are teams that don't play very consistent football. They don't play consistent at the quarterback position. They get out of whack in the secondary. Their angles of attack are poor on defense. But, you know, consistency matters a lot, and injuries and teams staying healthy matters a lot. Baltimore is decimated right now on defense. I don't know how they're going to get a stop. So that has a lot to do with it as well.
What did you make of Jackson Dart's debut? I know the Giants got a win over the Chargers, but they only had 250 yards. I think 3.6 per play. Pretty gross offensive outing for them, but he gets a win in his first outing.
Yeah, he uses legs, and that's something you would hope Russell would have done. But, you know, if you're going to be a young quarterback and you're going to struggle to drop back passing game, you better be able to run and get some first downs, and that's what he did. He had a scrambling touchdown, and he had another long run with his legs that kept the drive alive, which enabled him to get another touchdown. So that is key, and they're playing good defense. So protect the ball, use your legs, and get the ball in there when you can, and let the defense carry you until you get more experience where you can carry the defense.
You mentioned the Ravens. Their opponent, the Chiefs, have looked good all of a sudden, kind of off the map, or off the mat, rather, over the last couple of weeks. How much of that is they played a beat-up Ravens defense, and maybe they found something here and scoring 37 points?
Well, a lot of people put them on the map. They lost two games to two pretty good football teams. but the Chiefs are always going to be in contention with that quarterback. You know, I just mentioned quarterback play, so yeah. And they got Hollywood Brown back, and they're getting a couple guys. Pacheco looked like he was running a lot better. The offensive line has gelled a little bit more. So, but it does have a lot to do with Baltimore's defense. They're not very good. A week ago, they got crushed by Detroit, and they got crushed again by Kansas City, and they're probably going to get crushed again next week, whoever they play, because you know, you lose your starting corner, starting three technique, your starting middle linebacker. It's tough. I know. It's tough.
Two young quarterbacks I want to ask you about progressing. The Patriots are 2-2, hung 42 yesterday. Drake May, 3 incompletions. He's leading the NFL with a 74% completion percentage. What are you seeing from him?
Yeah, just what you hope. You just steady progression, and he's getting better and better every week. You know, the guy, you can tell, works his ass off at it. He works hard when he's not on the practice field, off the practice field. He works just as hard. And preparation matters. He's being more prepared for these games this year, the experience that he had last year. This year, moving forward, he's going to get better and better. And he's got a good running game behind him. and a pretty good offensive line, and defense isn't bad either. So you love to have young quarterbacks continue to progress at the rate that he is, because he's going to be a force with his athleticism and his arm talent.
And then the Bears have won back-to-back games under new head coach Ben Johnson. Caleb Williams, 5 touchdowns and a pick over the last couple. What have you seen in his development in the new offense?
Yeah, I think Ben is a very good play caller, and that's going to benefit, obviously, Caleb. And he has a couple of really good receivers out there, DJ and Roma Dunze, and the rookie they got from Missouri. He's a pretty good player, too. So they got some players around him, and he's starting to settle them down. To limit the turnovers, limit the sacks, keep your team alive. You guys will have a chance to win a lot of games, which they did against the Raiders. They didn't play very good up on the first half. They weren't very good. They weren't very productive at all. They stayed with the game plan. Caleb didn't turn the ball over, kept the team in it. The defense played pretty good, and they got the win on the road. So, yeah, I think he's going to get better and better again with Ben.
Jay, as a coach, how would you handle a Denai Mitchell who fumbles as he's on the way into the end zone, kind of celebrating, realized that I think before he crossed and tried to dive on the football, et cetera, he addressed the team this morning, but it's the kind of thing where he knows he messed up. But so how would you handle that as a head coach?
I don't know. It's something you got to try to take care of at OTAs and training camp, and you have to have your Saturday morning meetings, and you have to just remind everybody how important it is, how hard it is to score a touchdown in the National Football League. So you got to really take care of it. Don't celebrate till you get to the letters in the end zone, the back of the end zone. And that's something that you just hope your team never does. It makes everybody look bad. It makes the staff look bad. It hurts your team. It hurts yourself. And there's nothing benefits from it. There's no end zone celebration good enough for you to risk dropping the ball before you get there.
I don't think you ever crossed paths with Brian Callahan. I know Bill was on your staff here in Washington, and Brian was a longtime Cincinnati guy. You guys never coached together, did you?
No, we did not.
Man, is it a rough go of it? I would not want to be him right now. So his rookie 1-1 pick was 10 of 26 for 108 yards and a pick. They're 0-4. He's given up play calling duties. I guess maybe the way to go with this is, like, what advice would you give a young guy trying to find his way who's already given up play calling duties, offensive-minded guy, head coach in this league, and how much trouble do you think he might be in with a bad Titans team that got blanked yesterday?
Well, they had a pretty good quarterback, Will Levis. Everybody thought he was the guy and benched him for Cam Ward, and they've scored 51 points in 4 games, and they can't protect and they can't run the ball, so they're putting a lot on Cam Ward's plate. This is a lot to ask a young quarterback. Hey, we're not going to run the ball worth a damn, and we're not going to pass protect for you either, and we're probably not going to play very good defense. So here, good luck. Here's the game plan. You're going to get hit 15 times. You're going to have nobody open, and you're going to be trailing by halftime by about 20 points. So he's got no chance right now, Cam. Just got to try to stick with it and try to help him a little bit, but get the running game going somehow. But right now, I don't see them getting better anytime soon.
Jay, awesome as always, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Thank you, guys.
Be good, Jay.
On air and on the rope, Jay Gruden is driven by the Ted Britt Automotive Group, Ted Britt Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters, Ted Britt Lincoln and Chantilly, and Ted Britt Chevrolet in Sterling, all home to Ted Britt for Life lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at TedBritt.com.
A little bit early for this in the football season, I would say, but it's happening anyway. In week 4, after a tough defensive performance,
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's get into this defense for Washington, which has been a problem. And on a, I would say, staircase regression here, like a slippery slope, it's getting worse to this point of the year. They rank 23rd overall yards per play, but they are 30th against the pass. They're giving up 8.08 per play. The only passing defenses that have been worse are the Miami Dolphins and the Dallas Cowboys, who are the butt of jokes, basically, defensively right now all over the country. The question, Danny, is can they get right enough to be okay? They don't have to be great. They don't have to be good. I don't even think they have to be above average in the top 15. But can they get into that, I don't know, the ceiling of like 17th, the floor of maybe 2021 with more reasonable numbers than they currently have in their yards per play metrics, to the point where they can overcome offensively and with Jaden Daniels if he flips the switch to be MVP caliber again, like they did last year, because they were terrible defensively and it worked out. What I would point out, though, is they did it with a soft schedule. They did it with a lot of luck. They did it with, we looked up this piece in the offseason, but the best luck in terms of dropped passes against from other teams.
And as soon as people hear that, they recoil and get defensive and angry and whatever. It has nothing to do with anything that's subjective. Information happened.
But
right?
I don't even need to waste my time explaining away the point. Like, if you can't deal with that as a grown-up, you're holding your breath, that's your own thing to sort out on your own time. I'm moving on. Like, they got lucky last year statistically, both anecdotally and factually. That happened, okay? That was a thing that took place. But also, they didn't beat winning teams until the playoffs. Now, I don't care as much about that anymore after you go to Tampa and win, and you go to Detroit and win.
Those counted.
You beat some juggernauts. But in the regular season, the only team that was playoff caliber that you beat was the Eagles when their quarterback got hurt. But we don't have to re-legislate last year. The point is, they got where they did, 12 wins, NFC Championship game, despite having a suspect and at times bad defense. And the question is, this year, with a harder schedule, maybe without the same luck, can you overcome that defense?
No. What happened last year was they put a bottle down in the middle of the field and lightning struck it. What we're actually saying is, we'll just put the bottle down and assume it's going to happen again. Right? That's not how things are sustainably
done.
But
what if Jaden Daniels is the lightning then?
Then you still don't get a Hail Mary. Jalen Hurts doesn't get hurt. Devontae Smith doesn't drop an easy pass. All that had to happen was one of those breaks don't go their way, and they don't even make the postseason last year. We're talking about a great rookie debut with a 10-7, a 9-8 kind of team that is still a markedly better group than they were just a year before, and the transformation that happened. Just so happened, we got this unbelievable magic carpet ride, this charmed life, this thing happened. I was there. I had fun, too. You needed to improve. If you're sitting there going, well, we can be as, you know, kind of like we were last year. No, you can't. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse. That is an axiom I subscribe to, especially in this league, when you are not rewarded for okay behavior. Your schedule gets harder, and that happened by virtue of the fact that you're not always going to play backup Billies. You're not always going to play rebuilding teams in their place and the whole nine yards like you got away with one in New Orleans. You are playing better quarterbacks, better opponents, and this defense is so vulnerable to the pass, and there's no fix in sight. To me, it's a broken thing, and you can account for it. You can try to cover for it here and there, but when push comes to shove, they're going to get thrown on. I think Daniels is that special. It's going to happen at some point this year again, as soon as he gets the sea legs underneath him, as soon as he's healthy. But even with him special last year, they were probably a 9-win team that won 12.
Coming up on their schedule defensively, this weekend, Herbert, who went into the week before the loss, the MVP favorite with Josh Allen playing his butt off. But with the injuries on that O-line, he's now the most pressured quarterback in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see that changing.
And they're talking about how alarmed they are at all the hits he's taking.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's going to crash back down to earth if it hasn't already done that with that Giants game. The Bears. Now, Caleb Williams is going to keep you in the game with some misses and some decisions to hold on to the ball and take a sack or maybe throw the ball to the other team. But Ben Johnson in that offense and Caleb Williams, that's a tough scheme to prepare for. Now, they're going to find some things and find some air in your defense, probably. The Cowboys. Look at what they just did to the Packers. I'll raise my hand right now and tell you I was wrong about Brian Schottenheimer's offense so far. I think he's done an exceptional job, don't you? Without a running game.
Hard to argue against it.
And CeeDee Lamb being
and
hurt.
They run it better than I thought with Javonte Williams.
They do. They've schemed it up okay. But I'm saying it's not like they have a great running game back or running game. And now they don't have CeeDee Lamb, and none of it's mattered. They just keep having Dak Prescott throw to other guys, and it works, and they scored 40 on the Packers. Then you've got Mahomes. Darnold in Seattle, it's basically Jackson, Smith, and Jigba, and not much else in their passing game, so that's not quite on that level. The Detroit Lions, that's a problem. The Dolphins without Tyreek Hill now, that game in Madrid, I think, got a little easier defensively. The Broncos, Sean Payton, good scheme. Bo Nix will be playing better by then. The Vikings, Kevin O'Connell, one of the best offensive designers in the league. The Giants, no Malik Nabers, that got a lot easier. So they've gotten some breaks here. I hate to say it that way with the torn ACL for Nabers and the awful injury for Tyreek Hill
last
night.
That's the reality, yeah.
Eagles twice. By then, maybe they're going to actually be throwing the ball to their wide receivers and not averaging 111 passing yards per game. And then the Cowboys again. But you don't have stinker quarterbacks. You don't have bad offenses, really, on this schedule other than a couple, maybe three times max the rest of the way. I think they're better defensively than they played in Atlanta, and I think that will be kind of as ugly as it gets in terms of doing nothing right, only two quarterback hits, zero pressure, never covering anybody. Look like the team you're playing was thrown against air. But this is not a defense that's going to have answers with personnel walking through the door. Anything you're doing different personnel-wise, you're signing guys like Preston Smith off the scrap heap. 2 games later, has not cracked the rotation yet. And Darnell Savage, who played this week in his first week, a few days after being signed, he was on the wrong end of the touchdown to Kyle Pitts. Not to say he's not going to be a good player, but that's what happens. You sign a guy, he's learning things, he's thrust into action for 10 snaps, and you're giving up a touchdown. So it's hard to do on the fly. It's hard to get right. They just don't have enough really good players on defense. And that is rearing its head.
Without a doubt. I mean, again, they got away with it last year. And saying we're going to get away with it again, or we hope to, is not a good plan. Like, for those of you that are sort of like, yeah, Jaden Daniels will fix it, he could fix some. I mean, you saw it last year. They couldn't run the ball the second half of the season, minus that Tennessee game, which came out of nowhere, where Brian Robinson ran for a billion and everything was good.
And that Tennessee team was so good defensively and such a good team stopping the run, and then they ran all over them.
Which, again, I'll never be able to explain. But Jaden Daniels was the run game. He was the offensive coordinator, the time of possession maven, protecting the defense, and asking him to do that is hard to live that way. You got away with it for a stretch. But this year, they have been really good against the run, and the only times they have stopped passing attacks is when they've gotten home. They don't have, as Kevin said correctly on the Beltway Blitz, an elite five-star pass rusher who you can count on either to make the play himself or to draw the attention so someone else can. It's going to be hit or miss at times for rushing the passer. I don't think they'll have a consistent group, which means there's going to be times where that football is in the air, and when it is, they cannot stop it.
So comparing the defense this year to last year, statistically, at this point, not over the course of the full year, but 4 games in last year versus the first 4 this year, yards per attempt, 8.1 allowed this year versus 7.5 last year as a passing defense. A half yard worse. That is staggering. They are way better against the run this year than last year. It's not even close. But they are much worse against the pass right now. Both years, they could not generate any takeaways. 2, a quarter way through the season last year. 1 this year. Sacks are about identical, but their actual pressure rate is much better this year, to their credit. What I've noticed, though, and this is something Logan Paulson and I talked about on a brand new Take Command that dropped today with a detailed film dive that he did on the Falcons game. They've been way more conservative as a blitzing defensive staff since the Green Bay game the last 2 weeks. I don't know if they went into the Raiders game and said, we'll get pressure with 4, and they did. So they just said, all right, that was a win. Mm-hmm. And then they thought the same thing against Atlanta, and they didn't adjust. But if you look at how frequently they're getting aggressive and betting on getting home versus blitzing, like, it's all changed the last couple of weeks. And they need to go back to the well of dialing things up and helping their front out that was working in the first couple of games of the season. They've been way too conservative, I think. Explosive plays last year, that I think that's listed as like maybe 10-plusers. They had 34 through this point. This year, it's 32. It's identical almost. They're much better in the red zone, and they're on the field a lot more this year because last year the offense just never punted. Remember, I think through 3 games they hadn't punted once. They were 5th in the league last year in time of possession. This year, they're 28th.
Wow.
So
I didn't realize it was that bad.
I think that's why I actually think the defense is probably a lot better than last year, or maybe a good bit better than last year, but they're on the field so much more that you just get exposed more often. So that's something they can and hopefully will try to fix in a complementary way.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
As you heard Darius playing a little bust and loose there, I want to get into the Nats and Paul Toboni's introductory press conference over at Nats Park today. So first off, I want to say kudos to our guys for representing for the Grant and Danny radio program and for 106.7 The Fan. Two of our producers, Tobes and Ryan, were over there asking questions and getting to know the new president of baseball operations. Danny, I was immensely impressed. I really, really liked what I had to hear from Toboni. I'm not surprised. Because every person I've reached out to in baseball who knows him even a little bit has said, this guy's going to be a rock star. He's been on the rocket ship ascension. It doesn't matter who came in Boston. Like four different regimes, one after another. They go through and they try to meet everyone and say, who do we like? Who don't we like? Who do we keep? Who don't we? And not only did he get kept every single time, he got promoted.
We get promoted.
And from a basically an internship a decade later to running an entire scouting department, he gets a lot of credit for the Boston team that is currently up on the Yankees in the wild card round and has a chance to advance out of the wild card round to the division series this week. So nothing about today was surprising. He's going to kill the introductory press conference. He's going to be awesome on the mic. I think he's got really high EQ, and he's super, super sharp from a baseball standpoint. But there were things that stood out to me about him that I want to get into. But what were your big picture thoughts about his presser?
The thing we alluded to at the top of the show, which is, he was born and raised in this baseball world, whereas older guys that have run a team, again, no disrespect to them, it's like me with music now, where it's like I came up in a certain era, and now that everybody mumbles for rap, and I'm like, I don't really like this, but if I had to be a music DJ, I'd have to learn. It'd be hard for me to learn, because I wasn't raised in it. The guys that came up as scouts having to say, I got to listen to this dude from MIT, I got to listen to a computer guy that's going to tell me, pull the ball in the air. Oh, I'll just do that. Should I just do that when I hit? No problem. He came up in this environment with the duality, with the scouting side, that background, plus all of the numbers and data and implementation. So being a great coach with a great EQ, if you don't have the right information to sell, you're useless. If you have nothing but data and you can't relate to players, you're useless. The marriage. That's who this is.
I loved his opening comments. He talked about, and this is a quote, creating a scouting and player development monster, end quote. What a great line that is. A scouting and player development monster, which, by the way, is what he helped create and build in Boston. And hopefully he can do it here. He said it using analytics and research and development, the R&D department, acknowledged that the game is about people. He constantly walked that line between the analytics and that sports are about people. He cited Greg Popovich. This guy, by the way, is apparently a basketball mark. He loves basketball. He was name-dropping, being happy to be in D.C. for like the high school basketball and Georgetown and Howard, and he's talking about Coach Wooten and just going through the whole history of the area. So clearly he loves hoops. He also referenced my favorite book in the world, which is The Score Takes Care of Itself. I read it probably once every 3 years, Bill Walsh, which I loved hearing that. I think he's got four kids under six, this crazy person.
You talking about Grant?
Who in the heck is this 35-year-old man doing all these?
Who are you talking about? Is that you?
Kids and stuff. Well, what an insane person he is. Mm. But I like the cut of his jib. The big question is going to be assurances from ownership that they're going to look out for you, that they will provide the resources, that they will spend on players, that they will spend on the technology they weren't spending on previously. His quote was, "I'm in this seat right now for a reason." Throughout the interview process and even after accepting the job, I felt incredibly supported. And that was kind of what he kept going back to.
The support.
They're supporting me. They've told me they're going to help me. I'm sure they did. They want you. You know, a lot of people can talk a sweet game until you start dating or get married, and then that person changes a little bit. To me, that's the whole ball game here. The whole ball of wax is, if you tell me they give him all the resources, you just hired a guy that's going to get you back to being an annual contender. Will they commit to the bit? The Barry Svrluga question to Mark Lerner about, are you guys in this thing? Yes or no? That was, to me, the most telling moment of the presser. I couldn't believe there were only two questions to Mark Lerner the whole press conference. That's staggering to me. He hasn't talked in years, but that's where we were. But to me, that's the story.
Yeah, that is the alpha and omega of it. I mean, the constant, or the thing that everybody seems to agree on, and we don't know. I mean, Paul Timoney could, and his regime, as he hires out his staff and whoever he keeps and doesn't keep, et cetera, from this group, whoever he brings in from outside, they could make nothing but bonehead decisions. That's, you know, that's one of the variables. I don't think that way, by the way. I think it could be pretty good. Will he have the means to compete at the highest level? It doesn't mean you have a $350 million payroll and you lose a tiebreaker to the Reds. That's not what I'm talking about. But you have to invest something as opposed to nothing. Your on-field payroll is down at the margins, below the Pirates at the end of the season. Not the Steven Strasburg part of the payroll. Your highest paid players can't be watching and retired. Like, that needs to change. Yes, I understand it's not always about handing out a $40 million deal to everybody and overpaying and this, that, and the other. You need to build an organization, and they'll work on that. But even that part costs money. The best machine to make sure that pitchers aren't doing X. The best technology to make sure hitters are seeing all of the different spins and rotations. You need to do Y. That stuff has to happen because it's cost effective.
Well, we got to a point where I would just be content and excited when the Nationals had the tech that everyone else had. It would be nice to just once get it first. You know, or just not even first, early on.
Yeah, hey, this worked for the Cleveland Guardians, nice. And I came over from there. Let's go get it. Okay, we'll be second.
Let's build a pitching lab. You're allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, like biomechanics plates the Giants started using years and years before us. Let's not have to have 50 conversations about it and beg and do PowerPoints on why we need it. When he says, hey, I need the biomechanics plates so that I can see how guys are landing so we can keep everyone healthier, let's just do that. And if that happens, you got a chance to be really, really good. I'll read one more quote here, and we'll have some audio from Mark Lerner a little bit later in the show for you. But this was his second answer. He only gave two. There were only two questions to him in this press conference. But it was on, if the rebuild is now going to restart with a new executive spearheading this thing, or can the Nats win soon? And I'm paraphrasing, but that was the question. And he said, quote, I don't believe that we've gone backwards. I think we have a lot of great talent. A lot of these young men you haven't even seen yet, they're in the minor leagues. Now, I will say, their best talent in the minor leagues are pitchers that aren't quite healthy right now. Most of the bats that are really high-ceiling players are already in the big leagues, but that's me editorializing. He went on to say, I think we're giving Paul a great palette of young players. There's more we need to do, obviously. We're not happy with where we are right now. That's why we brought Paul in here. We're going to get back to where we're supposed to be. That's the commitment that we're all making to our fans. Do not give up on us. We're going to be there again, guaranteed. Now, maybe it's just because I haven't heard him speak in years and they haven't taken questions in a long time, but that was pretty powerful. Now, he's got to put his money where his mouth is, literally, coming up in the months ahead. But to say we're going to get back there again, guaranteed, I don't know that we've heard that from this ownership group.
No, we've not. We've
so
not.
That's something.
You can
believe it or not, their actions are going to tell you if it means anything. But just to hear it to me was a notable storyline.
Precisely. I would rather hear that than not. I'd rather hear that than, you know, we thought we did a good enough job. I'm just making this up. We thought we did a good enough job, but, you know, hinting that the previous regime that was in charge of baseball ops didn't do a very good job.
Well, isn't the Timoney existence, isn't the hiring of him? The press conference today is a departure from years and years
Precisely.
Of the status quo. Whatever you thought of Rizzo or Davey, they were just and lining it back up and trying again, lining it back up and trying again. We'll rearrange some deck chairs and change some scouts you don't know about. This, to me, this big swing that they're taking, you don't bring a guy in here on the cheap who's a 35-year-old rising star. This is at least indicative in this one hiring of a departure from the ways of the last several years.
You hope it's a paradigm shift. And it gave me some hope because I was surprised, frankly, that it went this way, that they got him, a guy that, you know, probably jumped ahead in terms of the normal queue of things where you go from assistant GM to a GM somewhere, then maybe that president of baseball ops, like a GM emeritus. he skipped ahead because he's a rock star, and that's what he sort of thought of. They hired a search firm, and he's in demand to go to major marketplaces to have increased roles, whether it was staying in Boston or to go somewhere else, and you went and got him. And presumably the pitch was and the promise was you'll have some autonomy, not some autonomy, you'll have autonomy and the ability to do what you want. That's how you get someone like that. So you hope the follow-through is there.
Danny, Terry McLaurin out, will not play, did not even travel with the team today to Los Angeles. Maybe not shocking, but notable. He is not close enough that on Friday, it wasn't even worth bringing him out there to see how things were feeling as you get closer to Sunday. Which, number one, I think puts his status for next week at least in question.
Yeah.
If you're this far away, we said this with Jaden. Remember when they ruled him out on the Friday before a game? In the first time he missed a game? Well, you can't possibly think he's going to be just locked, loaded, ready to go Wednesday to practice in full next week. And sure enough, he ended up missing a second game. I think it is very possible that McLaurin could miss next week. Now, we don't know. I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but it's on the table. That's point number one. Point number two. How many years into the league is Terry McLaurin right now?
Is this year eight?
This is year seven.
Seven.
This is the first time in seven seasons that an injury has forced this player to miss back-to-back games. It has never happened before. Weeks after missing the entire camp, missing the entire build-up to the season, missing all of the practices that he did, with people saying every step of the way, your risk goes up for soft tissue injuries, your risk goes up to get hurt early in the year by not practicing. My point when people would say that was to acknowledge it, to understand it, to say, yeah, that's reality. That's what the numbers say. If it happens, we'll talk about it then. It has happened. It is time to continue to talk about it. We are going to be going into week number six, and he is going to have 10 catches or whatever it is this football season. It happened.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not telling you he got hurt because of that. I don't know. I'm not telling you he hasn't been more involved in the offense solely because of that. But I have this. For the first time in seven seasons, he is having his worst statistical performance when he's on the field, and he is more hurt than he's been at any point. I'm just presenting information.
Yeah.
It has happened. The fear of why you show up and why you do all the stuff and why you practice and why you get ready and him not doing it and what that could mean has come to fruition. It has come to our doorsteps now. We can't avoid it. He's missing another game. We're going to be five games in, and Terry McLaurin has not been close to Terry McLaurin.
Yeah, I generally love being right more than anything on the planet. I don't take a lot of satisfaction in that, but that's the threshold I crossed before that second preseason game. Meaning there was a handful of days where I went, okay, you are now, even if you came back today, as I'm talking about Terry McLaurin, if you came back today, you'd still be too late to play in that second preseason game. No way you're going to play in the third. And remember, the Ravens backed out of that dual, the joint practice situation, which was, I think, far bigger detriment than we probably even realized at the time. We made a big deal about it then. You have lost the ability to prepare adequately for the season. You are then putting yourself in a position, at best, to get off to a slow start. At worst is this, and here we are. And I keep qualifying it over and over and over and over again. I'll continue to do so. We will never, ever know if this is he got hurt on a football play because it was a football play where he got hurt, or if he might have bounced back already, had he put in all the prep time. It's impossible to say, okay? None of us are doctors that have done the examination. None of us can go in with a micro camera and look at the muscle fibers and what they would have been versus what they are versus what they were during the injury. No one will have any clue. But the point is, there is a correlation. Other receivers got banged up too that were at all the appropriate stuff. This dance, whatever you'd like to call it, hold out, hold in. If you're cynical, call it a tantrum after a while. If you're, you know, the ultimate Terry stand, you can call it standing up for himself. Whatever you'd like to call it, this was the risk. It has now happened, to your point. So I think it's okay to be like, hey, I'm a little irritated about that. That the guy that's making the most, who wanted the most, who wanted more than this and that and the other, is off to his worst statistical start and is now hurt. Whether that was the fault of the holdout or not, we won't know. I just know that it's happened, and this isn't particularly fun.
In the Giants game to open the season, Terry McLaurin caught 2 balls for 27 yards. The following week against Green Bay, he had his best numbers. You'll remember, though, he caught a few balls. I'm not taking this away from him. I'm just telling you what happened. A few balls on that final drive of garbage time at the end of the game, and it was kind of lax defensively, and they're just throwing the football. And so that was the how many shrimp is Toby going to have to eat day, where he had to surpass Terry's yardage total against the Packers, and he got up to 48 yards in the second half with a couple of those garbage time catches. But he went 5 for 48 in that game. It was the third game and the last game he played against the Raiders when they won convincingly, when he actually had 74 yards on 3 catches. And there was a 56-yard play. That was the one he got hurt on, diving into the end zone. He probably scored a touchdown. I think he got screwed out of a touchdown. They marked him down at the 1-yard line. And on a tackle, a physical football play, he got hurt. Now, by definition, based on what we think the injury is, it is technically a soft tissue injury, but he got hurt via a tackle, and he could have gotten hurt on that tackle even if he showed up at camp and did everything. But here's the point I want to make. Take that 56-yard catch out of the equation, okay? Schemed up, albeit. A lull them to sleep with your running game, hit them with a little double move, like a sluggo type thing from Terry McLaurin. 56-yard play. You're talking about a 10-yard per catch average for him in the early part of the year. Like, when they got him the football, it was just kind of your quick, easy button, line of scrimmage throw on a screen, or 8 or 9 yard hitch stop route thing where you're turning around and looking back at the quarterback and you're just trying to get the flow of the offense going for a few yards, like a handoff almost. That's what it was. It was 9 for 91 other than that one big catch. Now, it happened, and I give him a lot of credit. And he also should have had a much bigger catch than that. If you remember week one, he ran like a kind of a stop and start post type move where Jaden overthrew him by a mile on a play that they hit every single time in the second half of last year. Do you remember that play?
I do, yeah.
I think that play is probably a touchdown if he's at training camp too, but he wasn't, and the timing wasn't there. And so he was overthrown, not his fault. He ran a good route. He was wide open. So it's a dependent position. I'm not sitting here saying he's played badly. I'm just telling you that the numbers through 3 games were the worst that they have been in 3 games. And now, for the first time in 7 years, an injury is costing him multiple weeks. Hopefully only 2. Maybe it's 3. Maybe he's not there on Monday night against the Bears next week. I don't know. But I am annoyed. It's not personal. I'm not mad at Terry McLaurin. I'm annoyed that we're here. I'm frustrated by this situation. It had the possibility of backfiring, and I think it has backfired.
That's a good way to put it. My frustration is a little bit more annoyance at McLaurin and by extension, his agent.
Can I say why for me it's not?
Please, sure.
I just think it's the business of football. I think you did the thing that the player does when they want the money. You played the game. I'm not hating the player. I'm hating the game. So the thing happened. Peters is involved. Washington's involved. Terry's involved. Buddy Baker's involved. Everybody's involved. So they can all catch some if they want. They can all catch some. But it's not about him. I'm not angry at him. I'm angry at the situation. It could have backfired, and it has. We're going to be going into week 6 in this town, and your number one wide receiver with the $30 million AAV is going to have 10 catches through those 5 games of football, and he's going to have been not able to post the last couple of weeks. This is Mr. Durability. That was one of the big arguments everybody made about why you have to pay him. It makes it harder to be durable when you don't get your body ready.
I just got to this point, I think, a week before everybody else. I'm not giving myself credit for it, but just basically saying, like, my frustration, I'm going the entire offseason. I said, hey, I get what you're doing, man. It's not set up for you to win this when you're under team control. If you have agitated enough, maybe you can get a trade, then an extension from somebody else, a la DK Metcalf, but the comps aren't particularly good for you. Do what you can, man. You've been really valuable. You've been a great citizen. You've done everything right here. You know, it's I hope my sons grow up to be like you, that whole on the whole nine yards. There is a walk away point, though, where you lose me as the ally. He passed that. He and his agent passed that point where my argument then was you are doing detriment to yourself as a player this year where you're under contract and the team that you're under contract for this year. You were already owed money. You were not a free agent negotiating with everybody else. You're stuck here. The CBA does not favor you and your agent to win this, and you didn't win. You signed a team-friendly deal really late. Maybe it was to send a message, let them know you weren't satisfied with it, whatever. Everyone's saying kumbaya at the end, but they basically got a one-year extension with an out after that. That's not what you were declaring that you were going for. They let the agent, Buddy Baker, patrol around and go, $96 million deal, and injure himself, patting himself on the back. And it took one cursory look to go, yeah, it's pretty much a one-year extension with an out afterwards. My point is, you could have signed that 3 months ago. You could have signed that in August, you know?
I want to hit the phones on this. We have not opened up the phones at all today, first three-plus hours of the show, but this is a good way to touch the people here at 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. Many of you driving home from work. So it's official that Terry McLaurin's not going to play against the Chargers. He's not even making the trip to L.A. To be able to roll him out after another day where he can't practice this early on a Thursday gives me pause about next week. Hopefully he'll be ready. It's just too far to know. How could we possibly have even an educated guess? But in the same way that I told you when they ruled out Jaden Daniels on Friday in his first game missed, that tells you if it's anywhere near close, if you're getting really, really on the precipice of playing, they go into the weekend. They give you every opportunity. They're not doing that with him. They're not even putting him on the plane. They're saying it's better for you to hang back and rest up and recuperate. We're here. We said all summer, what happens if, .. What happens if he gets off to a slow start? That would look terrible. What happens if the guy that doesn't get hurt gets hurt? That would look terrible. First time in 7 years, back-to-back games, he's not available for health. I know it's an easy layup, you know, shouty show take. I get it. It could have not had anything to do with the summer. But things are happening that have never happened before after this. So, yeah, it could be a coincidence. That's what you're telling me, though. You're telling me it is a coincidence that the durable guy who doesn't get hurt got hurt after not doing everything he's previously done to get his body ready. Maybe, but that's what you're telling me. That's what you're asking me to believe. You're asking me to believe it's a complete coincidence that he had his least productive three games. Now, I'm not saying it was just on him. They're not throwing him the ball. They're not targeting him. Maybe it's a Deebo Samuel's taking over. The offense is going through him. I think any of those variables, by the way, could have something to do with him not having been in practice all the time. They get used to throwing to Deebo. They build more of a rapport with Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff gets comfortable with what the offense looks like in practice. That's what he feels good about. All of these things could have been based on the fact that he wasn't at practice. I hope he's back in week 6, but here's what I know. Washington, in a massive game that they've got to have so that they're not sub-500 through 5 weeks, is going to L.A. this weekend to play the number 2 defense in the National Football League and one of the best pass defenses in the entire sport. And Jaden Daniels coming back from injury is not going to be able to throw to Terry McLaurin or Noah Brown. It's going to be the Luke McCaffrey, Jalen Lane show with a lot of Deebo in motion and hopefully getting some jet runs and end arounds and jet action. I'm being salty, but I'm a little annoyed. That's all. I just need you to do everything you can do when you're my captain, when you're one of the faces of the whole thing. Do everything that you can do so that there's no possible fly in the ointment so that we can't sit here and speculate. Don't let us speculate. You didn't do that. You gave us the ammunition to speculate. And it was him. It's the guy that never does. It's the best of all of them in terms of the professionalism who did it. That part is so annoying to me.
Yeah, I smell what you're cooking. I mean, when Laremy Tunsil doesn't come to OTAs because he's doing his own thing, I go, I don't love that, but all right, bunch of years as a Pro Bowler, star, I get it. He's going to get a million rest days off. It annoys me a little bit, but all right, the guy's going to produce. But when Marshawn Lattimore doesn't come and starts out the year terrible, this hand is up for annoyance. I have an annoying hand. It's going up. Remember when you didn't do everything you possibly could do to get ready for a season? Remember when the excuse was injury last year, and now you're getting toasted like delicious sourdough bread with just enough butter on it to make it go down clean and easy, and I wish I could have some right now because I'm really hungry. I'd love a toasted sourdough bread. But that's you, Marshawn. You're toasted sourdough bread, dude. Same deal with Terry. If one of the reasons that you're trying to give to get paid is this, is you do everything possible. Did you do everything possible this year? The answer is no. So that's my annoyance here. And the worst case scenario, so to speak, kind of happened. And whether it's coincidence or not, it did happen.
So give me two numbers. And this is what we'll hit on the phones next. 800-636-1067 if you want to hop in. What is your frustration with McLaurin over this situation now? And what is your frustration about the whole thing? Because I'm going to say with Terry, it's a 3. With the whole thing, it's like an 8.5.
Terry, 6.5. Whole thing, 8.5.
Danny, Chargers on Sunday, what do we feel best about and worst about? We do this every week going into the matchup. So some numbers here on LA before we really get started. The Chargers on offense are ranked right now this moment number 9 in the NFL. They are the 10th best rushing team, the 13th best passing team, middle of the pack in terms of interception rate for Justin Herbert, and middle of the pack, believe it or not, in sacks per pass attempt as well. But that's only because he's done an unbelievable job at not turning pressures into sacks.
Yeah.
I went back and rewatched every one of his throws last night. He is under duress almost every single
snap. And it feels instantaneous.
It's crazy how much pressure he's been under. We talked about it. 50 pressures the last 2 weeks for him. Now, the story for the Chargers is their defense, which is going to get their coordinator, second year Jesse Minter, a head coaching job this offseason. They're number 4 on defense overall in yards per play. They're number 19 against the run. They're number 2 against the pass. And they are 6th at getting to the quarterback and getting sacks this year. So when you look at this Chargers team, we're looking for something you feel really good about for Washington, something you feel really bad about. Let's start with the positive. The matchup favors the Commanders because?
Both of my answers, by the way, are going to be on defense. I think Washington is not particularly great up front. I think you're going to have games like last week where they're a non-factor, where quarterbacks are very comfortable. You're going to see that probably more often than not. But when an offensive line is overmatched, see the Raiders, you can take advantage of it. This group can. I think that by maybe the rush 4, maybe there'll be a few more exotic looks in there, make a group that's already struggling to compete have to communicate and compete. Maybe a blitz here or there. Frankie Louvu and company might get home a time or two. But I do believe they will be able to get some pressure. Now, what they do with it, you know, that remains to be seen. And you need to turn some of those into interceptions and fumbles and tip passes and some things to create a little more than just regular chaos. But I do believe this group will be able to get some pressure.
That's the best thing I think they got going for them this week in playing the Chargers when they're so banged up, missing both of their tackles, is that they're going to generate pass rush. But one of the other things I like is I actually think Washington's strengths defensively, forget the pass rushing element of this, which we've talked about ad nauseum already this week. I think what they do well plays into kind of how the Chargers want to operate a little bit. And here's what I mean by that. The Commanders can stuff the run.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at some of the numbers on Omarion Hampton as a ball carrier, he has been hit at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage at one of the highest rates in the NFL. Surprising for a Jim Harbaugh team, but they have not really been all that great on the interior at blocking things up so far. So I think this is a Kinlaw, Payne, Goldman, Newton game to win the line of scrimmage and to put LA in some bad downs and distances. And that's where now all of a sudden against a really banged up and just porous, bad offensive front based on what we've seen, that's where I think you're going to get your pressures. You're not necessarily going to have to blitz to do it. I think you'll be able to win. The question is, though, Danny, they have struggled, not just this group, this iteration, but I feel like here organizationally, since I was a kid with quarterbacks breaking their back with big scrambles and mobility. And don't look now, but Justin Herbert, who's got wheels and is an athlete, he is starting to turn up the heat a little bit on his scrambling.
I mean, he won that Kansas City game with an enormous get out of jail. I can't believe he escaped that scramble for double-digit yards that iced the game for them.
He is scrambling to run on a career high about 6% of dropbacks. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that is 10 times in 170 dropbacks. He's never scrambled at this rate, and it's climbing game by game here. He's turned those 10 scrambles into 95 yards, 4 first downs that break your back, and three explosives of 10-plus, and some really big ones there. In fact, his yards generated while scrambling, EPA-wise, plus 0.74 EPA per carry, is third best in the NFL. Only Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen, as scrambling quarterbacks, have had more success this season. The Commanders have allowed a league-high 8.8 expected yards per carry to opposing scramblers this season. So you got a team, well, they haven't gotten beat by it a lot, but you're facing a Michael Penix who doesn't really move, Russell Wilson who doesn't move. When quarterbacks have chosen to scramble against this team, they have been more efficient doing it than against any other defense in the league, and Herbert is really excelling in that area. That's something I worry about.
So for me, my concern is going to be my concern every time they play a football game until it isn't. At some point, the ball is going to be in the air. You can't get home on 40 dropbacks, right? If the Chargers call 30 pass attempts and, you know, three end in, that's probably more than that. Call 35 pass attempts. If three end in scrambles, three end in some incompletions or, you know, hurried throws where he throws it away, you know, five or six or regular old incompletions, there are going to be 20 some times where the ball is in the air towards a wide receiver. That guy's going to be open. That guy's going to have separation. And that guy is going to be able to run for days. I am terrified of what happens until it's fixed, and it has not been fixed yet. The last three games, teams have been able to throw it on them at will. The ball's going to be in the air at some point. Justin Herbert is splendid. He'll escape. The ball's going to be passed either Quentin Johnston or Ladd McConkey or maybe it's Hampton out of the backfield, and Washington can't handle it. That's my fear.
The Najee Harris injury is a killer for them in a lot of ways. The veteran pounding physical back who would help you with time of possession and do some of the intangible things in the locker room as well. But sneaky early in the season, I think this has actually benefited them in a sense to just give the ball to the better player. Amarion Hampton's a really, really good football player.
Yes, he is.
And they were going to do this timeshare thing like you're seeing in New England where they've got Travion Henderson, but they're still going to make Antonio Gibson and make
Ramondre Stevenson
happen. And Ramondre's like, yeah, I'll take my nine carries if you're going to give them to me. What would be best for business for that offense is just to get the ball to Henderson in space. And for the Chargers, now they don't really have a choice. You don't get to mess around with the plotting running back. One other thing that I feel good about watching the Chargers, going back and just watching every offensive play the last couple of games, I don't know what's going on with Ladd McConkey. He's in a little bit of a funk. He dropped the initial third down. Go back and watch that play. He's like wide open on a 3rd-and-7 or something against the Giants. He's at the sticks. Just a complete drop. He's been out-targeted by both Keenan Allen and Quentin Johnston this season. So he went from last year an 1,100-yard player who was one of the better, more utilized receivers in the league to being their number three utilized receiver at the wideout position. In this offense, right now, his target rate has dropped 7%. His catch rate is down 14% in terms of ball thrown to him. Does he actually haul it in? Some of those are drops. Some of those are that he's better covered. I don't really know what's going on yet, but it has been a very slow start for Ladd McConkey. And like a month ago, when the Chargers are on the schedule right before the kickoff of the NFL season,
that's the guy you circle.
I'm like, oh, damn, Ladd McConkey's going to go 9 for 117 against him. Right now, I'm worried about Keenan Allen, who's like a plus-size tight end, basically, running around. And I'm worried about Quentin Johnston down the field vertically, who's having this monster breakout season. Now, I say that, and I'm sure McConkey in the slot will end up working him. And, you know, the matchup with Sanders still is favorable for him based on how Mikey's played. But just right now coming in, I'm telling you, Ladd McConkey is not playing like you think he should.
No, and it's if the production has gone elsewhere to a degree, right? You already mentioned it, but Keenan Allen back has been a boon for them. He's one of those kind of short intermediate stuff, just winning with physicality and you know, unbelievable route running and technique, 24 catches, 231 yards. You could do some easy math there. That's sub 10 yards a pop. The difference has been Quentin Johnston to me. Is that they're throwing it downfield. Like, that's where the eyeballs are. And you would expect that Jim Harbaugh offense to do that as much. It's ground and pound. It's, you know, Rex Ryan lets you to bleep and snack from a handful of years ago. I can't wait to give it to Najee Harris 20 times. And they've kind of morphed into this new thing where they are slinging it down the football field, which is not as much McConkey's territory. But I've been surprised, too, that he's not been anywhere near as effective. I know fantasy owners were furious, taking him kind of borderline end of round one in deeper leagues and PPRs and kind of, you know, middle of round two, certainly. 16 catches for $174 is way more pedestrian than people thought.
I like how they're using Quentin Johnston. They've unearthed him a little bit. Greg Roman deserves a lot of credit. He got beat up in Baltimore, understandably at times. But this does not even look like a Greg Roman offense.
It doesn't at all.
Like, you're like, wait, that's the play caller? That's the OC of this team? This suddenly 2025-proof pass-first Chargers team? But yeah, it's Greg Roman. He moves Johnston all over the place. You talked about this, but he lines in the slot now. 15.5% of the time, which is a career high for him. He's caught 10 of 15 balls for a .147 and three touchdowns against man. So when they get him one-on-one on the outside, he's won on some double moves. And he's a scary guy. Now, I think it's a pretty good matchup for Lattimore because he's not a shifty guy. He's not one of these explosive dudes necessarily. He's like a, you know, SUV, basically. Like, when he gets going, he can run by you. But he's not overly twitchy. He's more of a physical wide receiver, which theoretically is what Hanzy Marshon Lattimore should be able to defend. But that's what Drake London is as well. I wanted to play this clip really quickly. This is from Take Command. Logan Paulson and myself host that Commanders podcast a couple times a week. We were looking ahead to this matchup. And when Logan studied the tape on the Chargers defense, which is really, really good, he saw some air that they allow for quarterbacks to exploit as runners. And he actually thinks Cliff should bake a lot of quarterback runs into this game, designed runs. Now, if Jaden is going to play, and it almost certainly looks like he will, it would take a major setback for that not to happen, there's a chance he's playing with a knee brace. So if that's happening, can he be himself? Can you slide? Can you get down? Sometimes the knee brace makes that quirky and weird for quarterbacks. I'm not really sure what that'll look like, but I know that Logan thinks that is one of the ways that you can actually beat a defense that has been really, really good.
I went back and watched all the explosive runs given up by the Chargers. And they're number 5 in terms of explosive runs given up, or number 2. So they do give up a lot of explosive runs. And I'd say over 60% of them were on scrambles. So Patrick Mahomes had a bunch, Geno Smith had a bunch, Bo Nix had a bunch, and so did Jackson Dart. So if Jaden Daniels is back, his superpower, in my opinion, is dissecting zone. And this team does play a lot of zone and running when there's open rush lanes. And I think one of the things about Jesse Minter and this defense is they want to bring pressure, but on third down specifically, they want to bring a lot of simulated pressure. And so in that simulated pressure with the 4-man rush, if you pick it up, there's huge running lanes for the quarterback. And you've seen that over the first couple of weeks of the season. So I think this is a great opportunity to kind of get back some of those offensive efficiency numbers, especially if Jaden Daniels is at 100% and playing the way we saw him play the majority of last year.
That's Logan Paulson from Take Command. Don't listen during 2 to 6:30, but otherwise, go check out...
Other times are fun.
...that Commanders podcast.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.